Lauren Hartglass, and you're listening to It's All About Food. And we are in part two of the program today, October 16, 2012, and I am really looking forward to speaking with my next guest, Dr. William Davis, the author of Wheat Belly. He is a preventative cardiologist whose unique approach to diet allows him to advocate reversal, not just prevention of heart disease. And this book, Wheat Belly, is number one on the New York Times bestseller list for 25 weeks. I'm looking at this weekend's paper. He is the founder of TrackYourPlaque.com program and lives in Wisconsin. Welcome to It's All About Food, Dr. Davis.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. Good to be here.
Thank you for joining me today.
Oh, my pleasure.
I just finished reading your book, and I found it quite interesting and entertaining.
Well, thank you.
It's always good to have a sense of humor, and I enjoyed all of that that was included in reading about wheat. The thing that I found most interesting, and I'd like to start talking about with that, is the history of wheat and how wheat has changed.
Yeah, that's a very important point, because a lot of people do not know that modern wheat is nothing like the wheat that our moms had, our grandmothers had. So many people will say things, for instance, like, well, humans have been eating wheat for thousands of years. What's wrong with it now? Well, it's very different. So modern wheat is an 18-inch tall, what's called semi-dwarf strain. This is the creation of genetics research that was conducted in the 60s and 70s. It was conducted to increase the yield per acre. And it was magnificently effective. So modern wheat is anywhere from 8 to 10-fold more yield per acre than the wheat of 1960. But problems. And the genetics people in agribusiness don't tell you this. If you change the appearance of something, and in this case quite dramatically, if you change the appearance of something, you change other things. You change its biochemistry. You change its genetics. You change multiple other aspects of this plant. But no questions are asked when these kinds of foods are introduced. And so we are unwittingly sold these things with virtually no testing for effects on humans. And it was unleashed on us on a widespread basis in the early 80s.
What's interesting is how manufacturers of these products actually talk out of two sides of their mouth. Like you said, on one side they say it's new and improved and it yields great and it's easy to produce. And then on the other side they say there's nothing different about it. It's the same product.
That's right.
It can't be the same and be different.
That's right.
But, you know, we swallow it, don't we? And as a result...
hook, line, and sinker.
Yes, and I used the pun intentionally, because when we swallow it, we have repercussions. Can we just back up a little bit and get some basic biology? Because I want to talk... I know a lot of people are confused about hybridization and genetically modified. And so my understanding is, in terms of semantics, the modern genetically modified technology that Monsanto and DuPont and other companies have, wheat has not been genetically modified in this sense where scientists in a lab have gone in and try to replace one gene in a chromosome with another.
Exactly right. So modern wheat was created using methods that predate genetic modification. So
yeah.
In the language of geneticists, no gene splicing techniques were used to insert or delete a gene, as in, say, glyphosate-resistant corn. So modern wheat was created by using, as you point out, hybridizations, what's called backcrossing, multiple backcrossings, where you cross with a different strain over and over and over again to get the characteristic you want. It was also crossed with very dissimilar grasses to introduce foreign unique proteins. But then there are a whole range of other, sometimes bizarre techniques, like rescuing defective embryos, which is commonly done, by the way. And the techniques are what are called mutagenesis.
Mm-hmm.
That is the purposeful induction of mutations. There are three ways to do this. You can do it with chemicals. You can do it with gamma rays, like making the Hulk. And you can do it with X-ray, high-dose X-ray.
So none of them sound good to me.
No, these are bizarre. So these are very crude techniques to induce mutations. The problem is, these are very crude and unpredictable techniques. These are techniques that are much worse than genetic modification. So believe it or not, even though everyone's in an uproar over genetic modification is actually an improvement over the methods that were being used. Now, here's the problem. All the results of the crude techniques that predate genetic modification are already on store shelves and have been there for 20 to 30 years, and we've been eating them.
Now, we kind of have a romance somewhat with hybridization. It's been going on for so long. Some of it nature has done. Some of it farmers have done. But still, there are genetic modifications even when we do this accepted hybridization.
That's right. So every time you mate a mama plant, a daddy plant, you get some percentage of unique. In other words, you are somewhat like your dad, you're somewhat like your mom, but you're not a perfect duplicate of either. You have your own unique characteristics, maybe outward appearance, internal biology, etc. Same thing with plants, that the offspring are somewhat unique. And most of the time, thank goodness, hybridization, if I hybridize two strains of tomatoes, that offspring tomato is likely very safe. But when taken to extremes, as many thousands of repetitive hybridizations, and then these other techniques that are sometimes bizarre and very unnatural. Let me tell you a quick story then. Clearfield wheat is a strain of wheat that's resistant to the herbicide Beyond. The patent is held by the BASF Corporation, the world's largest chemical manufacturer. It's grown on about 1 million acres in the Pacific Northwest. So this thing is resistant to the herbicide Beyond. Well, how did they make it resistant to the herbicide Beyond? They exposed the embryo of wheat seed, of wheat plants, to a chemical called sodium azide, which is a highly toxic industrial chemical. If there's an accidental ingestion, the poison control people tell you, don't offer that victim CPR because you're going to die too. And if the victim throws up, vomits, don't throw the vomit in the sink because it's going to explode. And that has actually happened.
Wow.
So this is the stuff used to induce mutations in the wheat plant. They did that. They made it after many tries, resistant to the herbicide Beyond or Amizmox, and then they sold it. Now it's consumed by a lot of people in the U.S. and other nations, but never tested for its suitability for human consumption.
So there's a lot of strange things that are going on with our food, and some of them have been going on for a while, some a little more recent, some a little less recent, but we're seeing problems with wheat, wheat intolerance, wheat allergies, and certainly celiac disease. And you believe that it's a result of all this playing around with the wheat.
Absolutely. So, for instance, there's a protein in wheat called gliadin. And the GLI alpha 9 genetic sequence has been amplified enormously. It's virtually absent in the wheat of 1960. It's present in virtually all modern wheat. And this is the gene that codes for the thing that triggers gluten sensitivity and celiac disease. So we know that celiac disease has quadrupled over the last 50 years. Mm-hmm. We know that gluten sensitivity, that is the belly aches and irritable bowel type syndrome symptoms and even joint pains from gluten. But here's the problem. So many people say, well, I don't have a gluten problem. So celiac disease and sensitivity to gluten is probably 8, 9, or 10% of the population. I'm much more concerned about the other 90%. Mm-hmm. That's the other 90%. The celiac experts are telling those people, oh, go ahead and eat wheat. No. There are problems in modern wheat that go beyond the gluten. So, for instance, this new form of gliadin not only stimulates intestinal problems, it's also an opiate, and it stimulates appetite.
Mm.
So this modern form of gliadin stimulates an increase in calorie intake such that the average person takes in 440 more calories per day, 365 days per year. If you do the math, that's a ton of calories. That's a ton of weight you're going to gain just from the appetite-stimulating effects of wheat. By the way, your appetite's not stimulated for salmon and beef. It's stimulated for carbohydrates and junk food. It's stimulated for more wheat products like bagels and cookies and chips and other junk foods. And you can see, all we have to look around us and see the effect of this.
I just wonder about the wheat growers or people that use wheat in their products, if they are familiar with this. I do remember reading about artificial sweeteners like aspartame, and they also increase your appetite. And so here someone is having a diet drink and with this artificial sweetener, hoping to lose some weight, and it's actually making them hungry. So there's probably a number of different things that we're eating that trick us and make us do things we don't want to do. And wheat is a big one.
I think, this is my pure speculation now, I have no proof, that the food industry has known about this for 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
Because I can think of no other reason to explain why wheat is now in virtually every processed food. It's not just in rolls and pancake mix. It's in Twizzlers, Lipton instant soup, Campbell's tomato soup, taco seasoning, frozen foods, granola, and virtually all breakfast cereals. You'll be hard-pressed to find a processed food that does not contain wheat.
But that being said, it is possible to avoid eating wheat, even though it's in so many products. And that's what you advocate. No wheat.
Absolutely. It's a return to real single-ingredient foods. So we know that green peppers don't have wheat. We know that cucumbers don't, or olive oil, or lamb chops, or salmon. So it's a return to real single-ingredient foods that we know food manufacturers have managed to muck up the least.
Well, you probably heard Jack LaLanne, he used to say, if man made it, don't eat it.
He was way ahead of his time, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was.
Exactly right.
You know, there's a lot of us in the alternative food movement that are trying to change the current food system. I want to mention Michael Pollan because he recently, in this New York Times this past weekend, the food and drink issue, he was questioning if there really was a food movement. I also remember him saying a few months ago that he was dubious about the wheat intolerance epidemic. My point is that there are lots of us who want to improve the quality of our food, and we don't agree on everything. But there are things that we can agree on, and I certainly think we can agree on people getting back to eating minimally processed whole foods as much as possible. All of these created, packaged things are high in calories, high in artificial ingredients, high in manufactured substances, hybridized substances like wheat that contain things that are not healthy for us. And going to the produce section is, that's where I get most of my food.
Mm-hmm. You know, there have been criticisms of the arguments I make, but you know, I find because people often think they understand what it is I'm saying until they actually hear the real arguments, and they realize they knew nothing about wheat or what this thing was they're being sold. You know, I've engaged in debates, on-air debates with PhD nutritionists, and what I found was it was like arguing with children because they knew nothing about what had been done to modern wheat and the peculiar components that are now present. They thought I was just talking about, for instance, a blood sugar effect, and it's not about just that. There's so many other aspects, such as this gliadin protein of wheat that stimulates appetite. That, by the way, is quite well sorted out. There are other things. It's as if, and this is not true, I don't believe this was intentional. I think it's just a series of incredible blunders. But when you look at this thing in all its components, it's as if this thing was crafted for maximal destruction.
Mm. I think we have a great movie to come out, the Wheat Monster. Now, what about wheatgrass, for example? Is that okay?
Probably not. So you raise the issue now of wheat germ agglutinin. So wheat germ agglutinin is a protective See, we have lymphocytes and antibodies and all sorts of complex mechanisms to protect us from bacteria and viruses and other invaders. Plants don't have such things. Mm. They have a much simpler protection system called lectin proteins. Lectins are usually benign, so spinach has a lectin. We can eat spinach just fine without a problem. But there are not so benign lectins like ricin. Ricin is the lectin of a castor bean, And this is highly toxic. It's a neurotoxin. In fact, it's been used in about a dozen terrorist attacks worldwide with fatal effect. Well, the lectin of wheat is wheat germ agglutinin. It's not benign like that in spinach, but it's not as destructive as the ricin from castor beans. It's somewhere in between.
Mm-hmm.
So wheat germ agglutinin, if I feed a milligram of purified wheat germ agglutinin, 1 milligram, a tiny little speck of wheat germ agglutinin to a laboratory rat, its intestinal tract is destroyed. It creates changes very similar to, not identical, but similar to celiac disease. Now, humans don't eat, of course, purified wheat germ agglutinin, but the average person takes in between 10 and 20 milligrams per day of wheat germ agglutinin. And that doesn't cause immediate intestinal destruction. It causes chronic low-grade intestinal destruction. And it can be expressed as acid reflux or the bowel urgency of irritable bowel syndrome, or it might be expressed as having Crohn's disease or ulcerative colitis, but just much worse. Because this thing is an intestinal toxin.
What about, you mentioned a website, growseed.org, the Heritage Wheat Conservancy. I was happy to read about that.
Well, that's Elisheva Rogosa, who's a very interesting lady in Massachusetts, who came back from Israel, where she worked in the GenBank project, where they were trying to resurrect the ancient grains. And they genetically tested these grains to prove what strains they were. And one of the things she brought back was einkorn. And so you now know the einkorn she brought back is a 14 chromosome. It's the great ancestor of all wheat in the world. So modern wheat's a 42 chromosome plant. What Eli Rogosa brought back was the original descendant of 14 chromosome wheat, the original wheat that predates even biblical wheat. So she sells that seed now. Now, I'm not an advocate of returning to the older ancient strains of wheat, because I do think that when humans, as hunter-gatherer cultures, first incorporated even wild grains, there were health prices to pay. There were more dental cavities, there was more bone disease. So it's not as if the older grains are entirely benign. They are better. They're far less harmful than, say, this modern semi-dwarf 42 chromosome strain. But they're not entirely benign. So my personal view is if you want ideal health, you do not consume anything that comes from the wheat family. Though I have to admit, if the world as a whole converted to one of the more ancient strains of wheat that predate all these changes, we would be far better off.
I remember reading somewhere, I can't even remember where it was now, but when agriculture began and then we were able to grow grains, we were able to feed more people, but it wasn't necessarily more healthfully.
I think that's the compromise that's been struck. That is, there's no question that these high-yield crops, whether it's high-yield semi-dwarf wheat or high-yield genetically modified rice or soybean or potatoes, I think there's no question at least some of these crops did help solve world hunger in some parts of the world. When modern semi-dwarf wheat was introduced into Ethiopia and Bangladesh and rural China, within a year, famine was converted to surplus. In fact, there are photos of mountains of wheat seed sitting in the square of small villages where no one wanted it anymore because it was too much, when there had been starvation just a year before. So I think there is an aspect of this that it did help solve world hunger. The problem is, I think we've compromised by selling a very flawed food that, while it may solve hunger in the near term, causes health problems, very significant health problems in the long term. Compounds, of course, by this ridiculous idea of cutting our fat and eating more healthy whole grains, as we get through such education vehicles as the food pyramid, food plate, Health Canada's message, all that sort of thing.
Now, we know that you and I know that wheat is a problem, and you've given good reason for why it is, but we've done some similar things to a lot of other things that we grow.
That's right. So the only problem in the world is not wheat, but I think it sits at the top. It is the king of kings, the worst of the worst. So if we eliminate all genetically modified corn, let's say, or for that matter, all corn, I think we will have better health. I think we'll have lower blood sugar. We'll lose a few pounds. If we limited all sugar, we would indeed be better off. many people would lose some weight, their blood sugar would drop, their blood pressure would drop, they'd feel a little better. But I know of nothing that will match the power of eliminating modern wheat, because that's where you see not just a few pounds lost, but 30, 70, 150 pounds lost. That's where you see so much of a drop in blood sugar that we have diabetics every day becoming non-diabetic, getting rid of insulin and drugs. We have blood pressures dropping so much we have to have people supplement salt and sodium. We have migraine headaches disappearing, acid reflux and the bowel urgency of irritable bowel syndrome disappearing, people with inflammatory diseases like rheumatoid arthritis, lupus, ulcerative colitis, and Crohn's having dramatic relief or cure. We have people with psychiatric illnesses like schizophrenia, bipolar illness, eating disorders, food obsessions, children with ADHD and autism having dramatic improvements, not cure in that case, but dramatic improvements in behavior, attention, and other measures of mental health. In other words, nothing can approach the health benefits of removing modern wheat.
I agree that wheat is a good thing to eliminate from the diet. There are other foods that people are talking about more and more that are problematic. Is there any plan to have some sort of clinical study to match your dietary plan with other diets?
Well, that's the incredible thing. These data already exist. Mm-hmm. So it's not as if I made this up some Tuesday when I saw this in patients. Though I've seen this play out in many thousands of patients. I've seen this in a real life setting, both in my office and the social media experience. In other words, online, people report to me every day on the blog, the Wheat Belly blog, the Wheat Belly Facebook page, and other social media. Every day, I'll have dozens of stories. I lost 40 pounds in the last two months. I'm off my insulin. I'm off one diabetes drug. I have one left to go. This is happening every day. But the data, the formal clinical data, already exist. The argument offered by the nutrition community is this. They say that there are lots of data proving that healthy whole grains are good for you. And what I've told them is, no, there's not. There's plenty of data showing that whole grains are superior to consumption of white and rich flour. So when we have the data like the Nurses' Health Study or the Physicians' Health Study, these are large studies that compared the effects of consuming whole grains versus consumption of white flour, there is an apparent health benefit. There's no question about that. If you replace white flour with whole grains, you get less diabetes, less weight gain, and less heart disease, and less cancer. The question not answered in those studies is if there's something bad, white flour, replaced with something less bad, whole grains, and there's apparent health benefit, what's the effect of complete removal? And there we turn to other studies where there has been complete removal of wheat, and that's where you see incredible turnarounds in health. What has not been done is a large, long-term trial, let's say 10,000 people over 5 years. We do need to have that kind of data.
Mm-hmm.
Personally, I'm not willing to wait to have my acid reflux, diabetes, hypertension,
right,
psychiatric illness get better for that long-term study.
Give up the wheat today. Dr. Davis, we're out of time. I could talk about this for a long time, but thank you so much for joining me on It's All About Food and for this very interesting information on wheat.
My pleasure.
Okay, have a good day. I'm Karen Hartglass. You've been listening to It's All About Food. Visit my website, responsibleeatingandliving.com, and have a delicious week.